So we're measuring proper time with our coordinate time at the outer boundary. Okay, so that's one small change. So again, you know, if all you care about is the physics, you're not going to be too interested in this. But so we do a quadratic fit for phi and pi. Capital phi, the derivative we just set to zero. But it turns out that that's not sufficient. What I had to also do was basically set the next point in to be linearly interpolated between the origin, which is zero, and the next point. So basically just set it to half of the next point. And this works. Okay, and this is pretty standard practice for spherically symmetric codes. Okay, and it doesn't seem to have much to do with the asymptotically anti-descendant. When you go to the outer boundary, you've got, you know, pretty much everything goes to zero or one at the boundary, and it goes at different powers of rho. So here, rho goes to zero at the outer boundary, so you just shift it over and pi over 2 minus n. So you set everything that should be zero to zero, everything that should be one to one, and things will work for d equals 3. But once you go to d equals 4, it wasn't working. Okay, so I needed something stronger. And so what I do is, so in general, you know, you just want to set the boundary point, right? And so Franz talked a little bit about this, about how you sort of only have the freedom to set one thing. And in general, that's true. But what I do is, if you take the sort of the penultimate and the third most point in, I set them according to power laws given by these. Okay? And once I do that, then things work fine. Things are stable. If you're an applied mathematician, I'm not sure what you'd think of this. Different things were tried, some that would make an applied mathematician probably happy, but didn't work. This seems to work. Okay, and how do I know that it seems to work? Well, that'll be in the next section, but I'll show you a test that I believe says this is working. Okay, so let's calculate the boundary stress energy tensor. Well, it just turns out it's just m, just the mass. So it's not particularly interesting. What else? Okay, but you can look at the scalar field.
Can you extract the other components of this specific tensor? There's no information.
So the only thing that's happening in the boundary is that you're transferring energy from UV to AR modes.
Okay, but so the scalar field, as you approach the boundary, corresponds to some operator, I'm told. So to extract that behavior, I do a polynomial fit, a least squares polynomial fit, to the last 10, 20, 30 points. Okay? And for the most part, those agree with each other. And I'll show you a plot of that as well. Okay, so I'm sort of going to mix together a bit about the dynamics and the test. But the first thing I want to talk about is this whole idea of how strange this is, right? So Jorge was saying, you know, this is really cool. I think it's really cool. It's very surprising, right? But, you know, I look at it from the bulk. I can't quite wrap my head around how gravity is doing this. But if you look at it from a different way, if you look at it from the boundary, right, and you think about what has to thermalize, you know, it's perhaps not surprising, right? And so you'll hear, or I've heard, you know, this is obvious, it had to be this way. Nevertheless, it's just really cool.
But you see, even from the bulk perspective, there is something more than the reflections, than repeating the process, right? If you repeat the process an infinite number of times, it will not guarantee that what you want to happen will happen, right? You need some extra mechanism that makes it happen. And I think that is precisely this turbulent shift to higher and higher frequencies that is localizing more. And when you have the next collision, you know, the energy will be somehow more localized and will favor the black hole formation.
There's some kind of natural focusing in ABS, but I agree completely with you. It's a bit mysterious how this comes about.
Right, but I think we agree. I mean, this is...
Yeah, but
something
there is
happening.
Something on top of the reflections. It's not just the reflections.
Oh,
it's
right,
also this shifting to higher frequencies.
Can I just ask, this is something that you've been also happens in flat space.
Yeah.
So that should be much simpler. I mean, the functions there are...
They're not even Bessel functions. If you have spherical symmetry, there's a sign, and it happens.
You mean asymptotically?
It should be able to understand the, I mean, this
it's a resonance.
Transfer to, yes, but I mean, in that case, it should be.
But there's not even focusing, I agree.
Sorry? So it's a transfer to shorter and shorter scales.
That's at least what this one
makes the differences and the reflections different, and then.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, did somebody study this dependence of this phenomenon with respect to the boundary conditions? Instead of Dirichlet, you put Neumann boundary conditions. You fix the first derivative rather than the value of the field.
Right.
Does it still appear?
So I think there are two comments about that. If you're doing this, I mean, you're giving...
Yeah, but you know, I don't know what Bizon has said about that.
So I think there's two points here, right? First of all, you have to guarantee that your problem is well posed inside the box, that you have gravity. And for Neumann boundary conditions, I'm not quite sure if it's well posed.
I think it was.
I don't know. This is a question. I
think it has been proven by. What's the student or this guy that worked with Johannes?
Gustav? No. It's the other student. Yes. So it's well posed.
I think so, but I don't know.
Even for Neumann. So the real question is then, are the frequencies commensurable in that case or not?
Well, I mean, your point, it depends on the physics, right? So you can imagine lots of boundary conditions. So
you
have to establish.
Go away like through the wall.
Exactly. So this doesn't happen in the asymptotic flat cases because any energy that gets
goes
and everything.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So you can imagine setting up boundary conditions that do not quite reflect all the energy.
Yeah.
And so then this process killed.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, you could imagine having boundary conditions that will increase the energy that it bounces off. In which case you're going to exacerbate this problem completely, perhaps mask it out by something that's not physical. So the simplest one is you bounce back all the energy that went to the boundary. And only then you can say, oh, this is the new effect.
And the other question is actually related to this. Do you know what is the physical explanation why all the amplification goes into higher frequencies? Is there any simple physical explanation why it should go to higher
frequencies? Isn't that what Jorge's talk was about?
Yes, or at least put it in a box. See what happens, right? And that's something that you should be able to see.
Well, that's
yeah, but then you should have also a crisp analytical understanding of it.
It's the same thing. It's just what I presented here.
It's the same thing.
You go to third order, you go to higher order, there's resonances, you see the transfer. But that's where it stops the analysis that I've done. I mean, I can't.
But can you
say
why gravity is doing this?
Why do you say that you see more than in an ADS? ADS
just
survives.
Gravity is attractive,
right?
So you have one configuration, it's focusing now. Gravity is attractive, it's going to make one compress a little bit more, then it reflects outwards. The next time it comes back to the same configuration, but now gravity is attractive again.
There's kind of an effective well being developed there every time the wave goes
so
there, and it clusters more and more and more.
But the wrench in this process is what happens in 2 plus 1 hydro, right? So if we believe in the ADS EFTs, and something happens in hydro that wants to go in the opposite direction in 2 plus 1. And
why is it?
Doesn't want to go to short. Smaller scales,
but you're assuming,
the opposite direction.
But you're assuming
but
that
no
this is dual to.
No, gravitational.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is, right, look at the boundary, right? So I totally buy that argument that gravity is attractive, so I would expect to see the same in all dimensions.
But in 2 plus 1, there's no long range, there's no real gravity.
2 plus 1 hydro. So 2 plus 1 in the boundary.
But I think you're still assuming that this is
hydro in the boundary.
But I can now say, if the gravity is telling me something, I can now say, okay, this should be telling me something the same on the boundary side, and then.
But it's not in the hydro regime that this is telling you something on the gravity side.
Say again?
It's not in the hydro regime that this is telling you something in the gravity side.
But I think that you could even hook up an even simpler example, just for the gravity. Take a self-coupled scalar in a box.
Right. Same thing happens. It's just a consequence of the.
So that would be kind of maybe the simplest.
Except that there's one difference. Is that the scalar field will not form a black hole. You need gravity then to trigger.
But what you want to see is the transfer to higher.
Catastrophe theory. It's the same thing. In fact, Bizon is just studying young Mills on a sphere. Simple exercise, right? Young Mills on a sphere.
I think that's scalar.
Even more complicated than the gravity.
Well, but it's angles on a sphere. The same thing happens. In fact, it's a standard Lorentz PD theory that you have a nonlinear system inside a compact space.
Yeah.
Unless it's very fine-tuned,
yeah,
you'll have this cascade.
So,
but that's really good. So you said that you have this sort of couple of scalar, depending on the sign of the coupling, you're going to see whether the attraction.
I've not studied the sign, the effect of the sign.
No,
I've not even studied that example that you're saying.
I think that there should be some very simple toy models that should clarify what's the mechanism.
I mean, for instance, the simplest one I know is the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, which is just what you said.
That's
a couple
yeah.
of
no.
And for that, there's theorems that say it's unstable.
But that's not a hyperbolic problem.
No, it's true. It's a parabolic.
It's not even a parabolic. Schrodinger is something else. So
Schrodinger is not a parabolic equation.
Yeah, because of me.
It's neither parabolic nor hyperbolic.
It's because
of the I.
It's first derivative.
Yeah.
So, but the simplest I would suggest is the following study. Consider the box, chain of oscillators, like a mattress in the box. And consider what happens if you start with some like localized state with directly a boundary condition. And then take the continued limit. See how it changes. Like,
that's
you
exactly
see
the
like
model,
it
that's
high
exactly
high
the
high
model
high
that somebody was alluding to here and exhibits this behavior. Somebody was alluding to
George,
this.
Yeah, George Miller.
Yeah, George. George was alluding to this. And this has been studied and apparently it exhibits all sorts of properties.
Can I ask a question? Related to this comment that the explanation ultimately is the fact that gravity is attracted.
Mm-hmm.
So if I now add, say, a vector field or something like this, something with repulsive interactions, should I say that this behavior goes away?
I think that the simplest thing is that you have to say to set up this model with a subcoupled scalar and then change
the sign
of the subcoupling.
Yeah.
I think I agree.
But from your argument,
I'm not.
I think it would seem that the same thing is still going to happen. So
if you excite gravitational waves, yes. If you just excite the.
No, but he's saying add an extra force into the problem, namely the electromagnetic force.
Right.
So gravity wants to compress things, but then the electromagnetic force doesn't like that.
But at shorter distances, gravity will dominate.
But the question is whether you will reach that regime.
You're going to have a richer dynamic.
We were thinking a little bit of putting a gauge field in the bulk, but the problem is you start running into issues with initial conditions. So one reason if you want to start your simulation so that there is no horizon, right, then you have to do something with a gauge field. And in a spherical symmetry, what is going on is that in the center of ADS, your sphere shrinks to zero size. If you have any flux, electromagnetic flux through the sphere, you will have a singularity. So it's very difficult to set up an initial condition in such a way that
you have a smooth
without
field.
A horizon and sort of smooth initial condition.
Yeah,
also,
there are the charges to go somewhere.
Yeah, but don't I use Gauss's law as a constraint equation, and that tells
yeah,
me.
Yeah, but then you see. Yeah, so you can do that, and you see that it's singular. Since there are pieces, there are equations that you have to satisfy, and blows up as if charge is not zero.
Okay, guys, why don't we continue this discussion in the discussion part and let him
we'll
finish?
Talk about it later.
Because otherwise, he's going to run out of time.
I think we found our chair now. This is okay. So it's time for a movie here. So let me let's see if I can handle this. This is close to the initial point. So I'm just going to set up what I'm showing you here. So the horizontal is the domain X. So the left side x is 0, right side x is pi over 2. Right, that's the full domain. So the origin, the outer boundary. What you have here is time derivative pi, but it's multiplied by x. It's multiplied by x because otherwise, as this thing went out here, the sort of relative amplitude would be very small. So. Okay, so you'll see what happens, right? So, you know, if this were critical behavior, then we just, you know, evolve it towards the origin. We either get a black hole or we don't. What? Okay. I think it already went in. Okay, so it just hit the outer boundary. It's coming back. It's coming to the origin. And it goes out. And so this continues on and on, reflecting. And ultimately, it's going to end in a black hole. And this visualization software is then going to either, I think it's just going to wipe the screen. So I'm going to try and freeze it at a late time here. But you see it changing shape. Okay, so it's going back and forth. It's changing shape a little bit. When you see these other colors come in, like this blue, and there's probably a little red in there somewhere, yeah. Those are the different AMR hierarchies. Okay, so those are higher resolutions. So in this, when you don't see the blue, it means it's not calling for any higher resolution. It's not particularly strong field. Here you see the blue kind of last, so it's sharpening up a little bit. And so we're getting closer to, there's not really much to see, especially in this field at the end. So in fact, I'm going to jump it towards the end here. And so this is going to form a black hole.
So it's like becomes sharper and sharper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is what can normally happen with water waves. We have a non-linear wave and, you know, the crest and the bottom.
And then they burst.
It's non-linear shrinking. There are these monster waves as well.
No, but in the water waves, it's a completely different principle there. What you have is a different piece of the fluid propagating at different velocity, and then you generate these shock fronts here. The perturbation is still moving at the speed of light. So I think it's very different from a shock wave.
Okay. So here's the test. So I wanted you to see that movie before I showed you the test, because one thing I was interested in was basically how convergence is maintained through the bounces. And, you know, so some people might be used to seeing something like this. What I've done is made this the order of accuracy, okay? And I put a black line at third order. And this is the convergence order I see for capital phi and for capital A. And so these are various resolutions. I know this is a little messy here, but basically as you go from blue, magenta, red to green, you're going to higher and higher resolutions. And the convergence order is basically going to 3, okay? And the minimum order, so there's various orders involved here, but basically the minimum order of accuracy is third, because I'm using Runge cut of 3. You see a bunch of noise at some of these bounces, but it's still convergent. This is different than these plots. This is a L2 norm of the momentum constraint. The momentum constraint has a time derivative, which I only evaluate to first order, because I basically just have two values. So you wouldn't want to extract the order of accuracy here, because what you're really seeing is the order of accuracy with which I'm evaluating the constraint. But I did want to mention that the constraint is decreasing, okay, showing that it is convergent. Okay, so this is, you know, kind of standard practice for something like this. Okay, so you saw that the bouncing. Right? And what I showed you was pi, so something you basically saw the scalar field. But here what I'm plotting is basically something extracted from the metric function A. When A goes to 0, that's when you have a black hole. Right? And so what I plot here is the minimum of A versus time. And so, you know, it basically starts out sort of compressed a fair amount. So instead of 1, right, 1 is ADS, it's like at 0.83. At the next bounce, when you reach maximum compression, it's still about 0.83, 0.83. And here it starts to get a little bit lower, a little bit lower, lower, lower. This basically indicates black hole formation. Okay? This is never going to get to 0 in these coordinates. So you never actually have a black hole. But it's pretty clear that this is a black hole. You know, it's becoming a black hole. Okay, ignore this for a second. So if you look at this minimum, right? So you've got all the information about A you want. You figure out just what's the minimum at any given time. You can ask, what's the x location of where the minimum happens? Okay, and that's basically the size of the black hole. Okay, so the minimum is here, and it decreases, and then it just looks like it's all zero here. Okay, so you don't really see very much. I don't understand why these are straight lines like that. But what I do is I take the log of this, and that's what's here. Okay, so this has nothing to do with this. It's just a headspace here. Okay? But if you take the log of this, you see that the location, basically how compressed it is getting smaller. Okay? So once I made this, then I really felt like I could wrap my head around what Bizon was seeing. Okay, so let's look at the asymptotics here. where to start here. So you've got the scalar field. As it approaches the boundary, then basically the boundary sees some behavior in the scalar field. And I mentioned this least squares polynomial fit. So this is the extracted value if I do a fit. So this is basically the constant that multiplies rho cubed in the fit. Okay, it's a fit to a polynomial. So phi 3 times rho cubed plus phi to the fifth, you know, just another constant times rho to the fifth. I'm not showing phi to the fifth. Okay, first of all, I mentioned before I tried with 10 points, 20 points, 30 points. Phi 3 pretty much looked the same for all of them. Phi 5 looked a little bit different. So that's something I still have to look at. Okay, but it wasn't clear what the best was.
This one is the physical, that's the expectation.
And you don't care about phi to the,
no.
The phi? Perfect. Because it took a lot of work to generate this, so I was happy not to.
The other one is determined.
Yeah,
this one.
Yeah. The other one. But what you said is we observe in a completely different coding scheme that it's incredibly difficult in the presence of a scalar to get the, when you're learning, you know, to get the, like, in your case, phi to the fifth. Those are.
Okay. Well, so
sometimes you are lucky you can get that one, but the next one is just 100% of error. It doesn't matter.
Could you repeat the speaker? Could you repeat once more what compressing the pulse, like in simple terms? I'm sorry.
Gravity.
Gravity, yeah, that's.
But without gravity, it won't be compressing. I would say that compression of the pulse is just related to the fact that everything goes to the high frequency.
I think it's just
a
resonance effect. I'm not so sure if gravity is that important.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
I think this is a matter that the springs are just.
Well, if you turn off gravity, it's linear. So.
Sorry.
No. Here you have no, but gravity
suppose
here is providing the nonlinearity.
Yes.
That's about it.
Right.
But you could take the same scalar field, couple it to an electromagnetic field. Now the problem's nonlinear. You expect to see some kind of cascade?
I don't expect to see formation of a black hole, of course, but
mm-hmm.
I think if it's nonlinear, you will see a cascade. As long as the normal modes are integers. If it depends on the constant in a continuous way, the coupling constant in a continuous way, I don't expect it.
But again, what do you mean by mode? Because whenever you do, this is what we had discussion before. When you talk about this weakly turbulent instability and you talk about the spectrum of linearized modes, it's on top of ADF. So it actually is the same spectrum, except that now, for example, you have a bunch of extra scalars or so, but the spectrum of linearized fluctuations is exactly the same. It's a spectrum in ADS. It has the same formula.
But what always is? I don't understand your question.
No, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that from the perspective, what drives this instability,
yes.
and so you were presenting the making a statement that it's there are special relations between frequencies of your linearized excitations in ADS,
yes.
And so what I'm saying is that those relations will be always there. I mean, if I use your it's not like I am, for example, if I would have a different background, the original is ADS, right? So I look at.
Say, imagine you take ADS, but instead of having a sphere at infinity, you have an ellipsis.
Sure, but if I have a sphere, then I'm guaranteed to have the
right,
same, even
think,
though I have extra fields.
But I think Robo is asking a slightly different question. Take flat space, inside the box, turn off gravity, put just a scalar field coupled with the electromagnetism.
Oh, let it be even self-interacting.
Or self-interacting. And then I think it will depend on the normal modes of that scalar field that you put in flat space.
But in the linearized?
In the linearized. In the linearized.
I guess I'm not sure though why that's an issue. I mean, I have a box.
Right.
I can make it massless. So
if it's massless, then I would say the same thing happens.
It's got to happen.
Yeah.
And so things compress, or does it say something else?
No, I think things will compress. Just because things are moving towards higher and higher frequency. It's an oscillator thing.
Well, the fact that it excites higher frequencies is okay, but why all the amplification goes to the highest frequency? That's a strange thing.
If you put soft coupling, that's a derivative soft coupling, then that's probably mimicking better the
gravity.
Gravity. and that would probably tend to make everything go to the shortest frequencies.
Smallest?
Well, highest frequencies. So
yeah, yeah. Because it's through the derivative that it couples.
And that would be a good model.
So if you don't expect to have everything going to high frequencies if you have just pi to the fourth?
I'm not sure, but in the other case, I would say that.
But that's really easy to check. Maybe you should.
Okay, is that the
point? Really easy to check.
You're saying that I have this bunch of oscillators, and just because they couple derivatively, basically the high frequency modes have a coupling constant between them that's
higher.
That's multiplied
yeah.
by the energy.
That's a
yeah.
simple
that's
model for gravitational type of interaction. That's
you
that grows with
you think the case of nonlinear Schrödinger, which is not quite the same, but still.
But for
everything
the
nonlinear
Schrödinger,
high frequency.
I don't know much about
but for the nonlinear Schrödinger, this was mathematically shown. It really does go
yeah,
to high
I'm
frequencies.
I'm worried that the problem is somewhat different.
Yeah,
I just keep thinking of
I
the hyper curve,
but
you change the dimension, it goes in the opposite way.
I
see the nonlinear Schrödinger is just, how you say it, it's just a non-relativistic limit of five
yeah.
to the fourth series. So,
but
and there it still goes in this direction. And it's a theorem.
Okay, yeah, so I guess I didn't see my title here, so I don't have an answer to that. But I do have a power spectrum FFT. Don't ask me too many questions about this. I use something else to calculate it. But what you can see is that the spectral content appears to be shifting towards the right, which I'm taking to be higher frequency. Right? I mean, clearly, just looking at this, you can see higher frequency is going on.
So I guess that is one way how you can, coming back to the discussions, that's one way how you can see whether there is any turbulence in the bulk can get reflected in the boundary, and that's through the Fourier transform of the square after each bounce, after each bounce.
Okay, so Bizon's work looks good. Okay. It's never bad to say that, right? I mean, to have confirmation. So it's here where I'd start talking about all the cool stuff that I see with a complex scalar field. I can say a few things. I could probably say a bunch of things that are wrong, but hopefully what I say now will be correct. So we look for boson stars. So Alex found some boson stars, and he didn't put in a mass term, which I believe you need for 3D... three-dimensional asymptotically Minkowski. I think otherwise it basically just doesn't get confined. It essentially just doesn't exist. But with ADS, presumably the fact that you're sort of in this confining geometry, you don't need that potential apparently. I don't know that anyone's ever said it, but Alex's work suggests that. And then I happen to be looking at some of your work. And this was, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but Bizon's work, Franz's work, and this, you know, that all sort of came about, at least in my head, around the same time, and it was really pretty interesting work. But anyway, so they look at boson stars, rotating boson stars, right? Very different than what we have here, again in ADS, and they don't have a master. And so we find solutions, and we can read them into the code. That's not a problem, and then we can evolve them. Okay, and so, you know, when you think about just sort of this instability, where you just put in any kind of energy, you form a black hole. I guess I was expecting to put the boson star in there and have instability and form a black hole, whether it was stable or not stable. Well, I mean, well, presumably it just wouldn't be stable. But I stick it in, and it seems to work perfectly. It just evolves. So this, I didn't really mention, let me go back. So I've got two scalar fields here. So you can think of them as the real and imaginary parts of this. And so basically the energy just sloshes back and forth, phi 1 to phi 2. And so when I put them in the code, they just oscillate harmonically and the boson star just sits there. In fact, I've got a movie I can show you. I'll show you that in a second. But the crossing time is basically pi. So I've done 30. I've probably done a little bit more than that. I think this movie is roughly 30 pi. And because it was stable, and again, this is part of the critical behavior kind of personality that I have, I guess, you know, I want to perturb them and make it unstable. So I add a little Gaussian to the outside of the boson star. And I mean, you could imagine lots of different perturbations, but so I just did the simplest thing there is, which is to put the Gaussian in phi 1. So there's no charge associated with that perturbation. I thought that might become significant. It doesn't appear to be. Okay, and so we're going to be looking at the metric function A. And hold on, let me go back. Okay, so this is early time here. So in the yellow is the boson star. Again, this is the metric function. It's the stationary solution. So this should basically be static for the boson star. What you'll see if you do pay much attention to it is it slowly kind of, well, I mean, it oscillates basically at some quasi-normal kind of frequency. On the scale of this plot, this is 0.28. So it's almost zero. One is ADS. And so basically, it'll move roughly like this much here. Okay. On the scale of what's going on, it's hardly noticeable. The blue and the magenta are perturbations, exact same form, just different amplitude. I think this is like 0.05 and this is 0.075. So asymptotically, you can basically read off the mass. You can see that the magenta one has more mass. Okay. So I would suggest, well, I can show this a number of times, but you might want to watch the purple one, the magenta one. Okay, I froze it. It's about to basically go off the screen. Okay, the code is about to stop with this run because it's forming a black hole. Right, so this is 0.28, this is 1, you know, so this is like 0.4. So usually anything under like 0.6 or so, and it's going to form a black hole. Okay, so this one's going to go away. It's a large perturbation. I just collapsed the boson star. The blue here, it's kind of come in, the perturbation, and then you'll start to see it go out. Okay, so now it's moving out. The yellow one is still just sitting there. Oops. So now the perturbation's here, now it's coming in. It's going to go back out again. Okay, so the blue one is just going to keep sloshing back and forth like that. So, you know, I did a bunch of runs because I kept waiting for this little, you know, you can't really see it on the scale, but this is just a little Gaussian pulse here. So I figured the pulse would steepen up. Steepen up. So I ran, I went to bed, and I looked. It just kept running and running and running. So that's why I say that it's apparently stable.
But it looks like it's sort of getting bigger.
Doesn't? Well, it sort of reaches this maximum right about here. Whoa. Let's see when it comes back. I think it's just going to repeat. I'm not that stable, you know. It's just,
so can I just make a comment why I think this is expected? The normal modes of the boson star are not integers. They're continuous deformations of the normal modes of ADS. The frequencies are not commensurable. You have no resonance mechanism in this case.
Right, and that's why I was making comments before. So if you start, which would be inter, we haven't done that yet, but to explore the space of initial conditions and sort of start and try to see, say, maybe starting with a Gaussian profile and see that some profiles collapse to black hole and some of them end up in a boson star.
Right.
So from this perspective, if you do that, then, you know, this weakly turbulent instability would, or whatever the spectrum would look the same. So,
right.
If
so if you start, if you start with the pure EDS with a complex scalar field, I think a black hole will form. But here you're doing something different. You're starting with a boson star and putting a little Gaussian on the top of the boson star. The boson star itself doesn't have resonance mode. In fact, this will still form a black hole, but it's an ergot. I think it will be an ergodic kind. You have to stay. I mean, I don't think it's within the region.
But you say pure ADS, but we don't. None of this is pure ADS, right? We either start with a boson star
but
or some Gaussian.
But you're far away. This is a
far away
thing from ADS because the normal modes of these. You can compute the normal modes of these guys. It's a calculation that has been done by Radu and others, and they're not. There's no combination of these guys, subtraction or multiplication or whatever, that gives you another normal mode. So I don't think this will exhibit this, it will exhibit, but it will have to be, I think, more towards an ergodic time, which...
Could you think of the blue line just as an excitation about ideas? I mean, your argument is about the boson serve. Is it, how much is the difference between the background and the...
That's
the problem. To scale this blue and the yellow line?
I mean, it's just, I'm not sure what scale you're talking about, but...
Yeah,
the static boson star with the same mass of the blue line.
No. The blue line has a little bit more mass because I've added the perturbation.
Right. So you have to compare the yellow with blue.
I'm just saying that it's so different from the static background with that mass that I don't know if it makes more sense to think of it as a perturbation around the boson star or around pure ES. So.
What you're saying is if you decrease the boson star mass, at some point you're going to see black hole formation, because you can think of it as deviation from the answer.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying if you have to study critical collapse around ADS with a complex scalar field. And that's, I think, a different calculation than that. But I think this is extremely interesting because, you know, there's a different path. It might not, from the field theory perspective, the black hole has entropy. So we'll probably go to the black hole. But the
same argument would have said that this should end up in a...
It will take an ergodic time.
Well, I mean, again, it's that's why, you know...
It will, sorry, I think it might...
The ergodic time is infinite here, right?
Well, I mean, you have to wait until this gets explores all phase space and it gets consistent with the...
But, I mean, we're doing classical physics, ergodic time is infinite.
No, I'm just saying that the time it takes from the black hole here is like the exponential of one over epsilon or something like that.
But is the amplitude of the boson star somehow quantized? Or?
No.
So you can make it arbitrarily small.
Yep.
Well, not quite. So if by calling the amplitude, you mean the amplitude of the scalar field.
Yeah, I guess.
So that saying the boson stars exist in... you know, in some range of the amplitude.
But it starts at zero.
It starts at zero, and that corresponds to...
So it starts at zero, but I can't make it arbitrarily small.
Yeah, you can make it up. You cannot make it arbitrarily large.
I cannot...
Make it arbitrarily
large. No, but Zhao's question was, you know, if I can make it arbitrarily small, at some point I should be thinking of it as a perturbation around ADF.
That was my response to...
But is there some kind of critical amplitude then?
Right, so can you increase the boson star you start with and see whether the pulse, the actual perturbation leads or not to...
But why don't you just start with pure ADS, and study critical collapse in pure ADS with a complex scalar field.
No.
This is not what he's doing.
Forget
yes.
boson
except
star. Forget to know about the boson star. Start some configuration, which is this blue line of two scalar fields.
Right.
You don't need to know that the boson star.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is
super
collapse.
In fact,
two scalar fields.
Steve never inputs anything into the metric. So he just puts the... What's your initial condition?
In ADS.
Yeah, but it's ADS.
Can I give a guess for an answer to Rob's question? So is it true that if you, like the magenta line before, if you put too large a perturbation, it will form a black hole,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think what happens is that how large the perturbation, the blue line, has to be in order for this eventually to form a black hole, depends on how big the amplitude of the boson star is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
If you make a huge boson star,
right.
Yeah.
That's what
or
I'm saying.
If you make a very small one, then a small blue curve will form a black hole.
The magenta line
didn't oscillate, it just collapsed.
Pretty much. Well, but
so I think that's a different mechanism. We'd like to see this sharpening.
That's just standard boson star.
Alex emails me the boson star.
What did I see?
before.
I take the phi for that.
I can still zoom.
So one day I bet that.
I don't understand what's so funny.
That's the way of kilograms.
Hey, so why don't we just let it finish? Because, you know, 10 minutes, we can continue this with coffee. Okay?
I take the scalar field.
Or not.
I set the scalar field. I add a perturbation, a little Gaussian to phi 1. Okay, the scalar field's set. I solve for the metric. I solve for delta.
That's it.
So they know about this pulse.
Only one question. The configuration you start with before you add the Gaussian
right.
is a boson star.
No.
Right.
No, wait. No. I know what he is asking, and that is not what you are doing.
The trick,
you are not taking. Well, wait.
For
a second, you have to listen, because you know you keep saying this over and over again. The initial condition he starts. Yes, it is true that you solve all the PDEs, and there are a bunch of functions. But that's not, I think, what Steve is doing. He's taking a scalar field. And what's with the metric? What's your initial condition for the metric function?
I solve for the metric based on the scalar field.
But the initial condition. What's the initial condition? The initial condition for a scalar field is just a bunch of numbers, right? Or some profile. It's no different from, say, Bison and company. But what's the initial condition for your metric function?
It's just the constraint.
You integrate the constraint, so make sure that. But you are not putting by hand, so that the solution is a boson star.
No. It's just a generic solution.
So if he would put the initial condition to be a boson star, I would agree with you, because then the relevant question would be to sort of quantize linearized fluctuations on the initial background that he puts in and see if the frequencies are commensurate or not. So that's not what he's doing.
The first iteration that you get from integrating the scalar field is the metric of a boson star.
No, it's
not iterative.
No,
I just basically integrate. I'm not.
There is he's solving a Hamiltonian constraint.
Sure,
which
but
is basically
the
mass
starts with that. So this, I think, this is the question. You have a configuration that is a boson star. Sorry, that's the scalar field that is a boson star, right?
It doesn't have to be.
This isn't a boson star. This is just collapse of a complex scalar field, right?
Exactly, and it's bouncing, bouncing.
I don't know why
it's
No, but that's fine. But what is the difference between the perturbations here and the blue line if it has a small amplitude? Why would I say that they're different?
It's just a different configuration for the scalar field.
That's all.
But
then you solve for the metric after you set your initial.
But is there any characteristic? I mean, Zhao's point is that there really isn't any clear distinction between those two sets of initial data. And in one case, we're seeing the sharpening effect, in the other case, we're not. And he's shaking his hand, but I don't.
Well, one has a boson star. One has a lot of charge.
No,
okay,
there
so
no
oh, there is no charge.
Well, there is no. This is related to the same.
So what is the total mass?
Maybe this is a copy.
It's a total mass.
Right. Total for the blue and the yellow.
Yeah.
You want? I don't have the numbers, but
they're still small.
Well, I mean, so you can sort of read off the mass as you look at
right.
the asymptotic.
Do you have the numbers there? I mean, in both cases, are they of the same order?
Yeah, I mean, one's just going to be a little bit more. I mean, so if I show you.
I mean, I just want to know if it's a small perturbation
question.
Around ABS, basically.
Let me make
no,
one
no,
other question. What is the difference between the magenta and the blue? It's the amplitude, the initial amplitude just of the initial data, right? The
right.
magenta
yeah.
and the blue.
Yeah.
So tell me something. If you start with the magenta one and you start decreasing the amplitude,
right.
do you see two bounces and then black hole formation, then three bounces, black hole formation, four bounces, and it's...
So I've only done it a little bit, you know, so I tried one.
With the magenta, you clearly see black hole formation.
It's right. I've never been able to get a bounce and then black hole formation with perturbing a boson star. But back to the bounce. So if you look here, the yellow kind of decreases slower than the blue. And if you saw the magenta, it comes off a little bit lower. And so that means it's more massive.
Can I ask, could we remove the yellow from this picture altogether? And we wouldn't lose any information. Because
this blue line is not a perturbation around the yellow one. Initially, I thought was a reference background, and the blue line I was supposed to think about as a perturbation of the yellow one, but it's not.
Well, it's a fully nonlinear perturbation.
Right, so it's just some initial condition.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So I still don't understand the difference between this movie and the previous one.
So if you
start
with
the initial conditions, but I thought the conclusion from Bizon was that no matter what you start with,
no, but
yeah,
it's a complex scalar field.
So for a complex scalar field, you don't
seems,
see that behavior.
Well, it seems
right.
So
the whole motivation of this work is to show that there are systems and to try to explore systems which do not equilibrate, but end up in some sort of, you could say, transient state or whatever it is.
Okay, but then I don't understand his talk, because...
we're not letting him yet, so.
Can I? Because here, the frequencies of the gravitational mode will also be commensurate.
No, that's what I keep saying here.
But he's saying that this is no longer pure ADS.
It's no longer close to ADS.
I don't think this is close to ADS.
That's not what I'm saying.
No, but if it's not a close perturbation to ADS...
Yeah, whatever it is, he claims it's not a small
it's
deviation.
It's not a small deviation from ADS.
So you're saying, if I put a small
it's
deviation...
It's not linear perturbation, you're a big one.
No. I think what's happening here is that the background solution, or the would-be background solution, is more close to a boson star than what it is to ADS. That's all I'm saying.
Can I propose a resolution?
So the normal
to this
modes
puzzle?
Of this.
So what you show is that around ABS, small perturbations start to grow, right?
Yeah.
And then you conjecture that they form black holes.
Right.
But in this case, when you have two scalar fields, there's another possible stable solution for this charge.
Right.
Which
so,
is distributed
so,
amongst the
so the perturbation grow, but when they are big, maybe they just stay around. Maybe this boson star has some basins of attraction which is stable. So in the initial condition space of two scalar fields, there are some ones that form
so
black holes and some ones that don't.
It could be like shock tweaking in a syntactical flat case. There is a critical amplitude above which you form black hole in this case, and below which you stay
right. So there is a critical, if you wish, amplitude for this stationary boson stars, but this is not a boson star, so this is like, you know, sort of a, as somebody was saying, a basin of attraction
mm-hmm.
around given boson star solution. What's interesting is that this is just a single boson star, the yellow one. There are definitely many of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
so. But so, Seidel and company in the 90s built solutions which are not, boson stars which are not.
Oscillons.
Mm-hmm. Is this
so? What is that?
No, this is the next cousin.
But it's what it has. It has a percent dependence on in time.
It has a multitude of modes built in there.
A kind of wave packet boson star something.
It's a real scalar field.
Yeah.
I think that they're talking about that oscillates. So it's not stationary, but
exactly.
It's nearly periodic, and it's very long lived.
Right.
Nearly periodic,
yeah,
but not.
Yeah, I think that's
the
equivalent of our GM. I think. What is interesting? I think the question that is not asked, and if maybe somebody could comment. So, what are those states that do not equilibrate from the field theory perspective? I mean, it looks like a perfectly normal boundary.
But if you introduce quantum effects, then it will thermalize at least in aerobic time.
But I want to stay in the large end limit.
Infinite end.
Right. So I mean,
if you have infinite end, then you have all the paradoxes that the system doesn't thermalize properly. You already have them in the.
The other sequential thing tells you that system
yeah.
more or less always thermalizes. So it's actually very difficult to find something that does not thermalize.
But in your example, you start from a thermal state, so it's kind of one of the.
No, there is, does it? No, yeah, in this, but in this one.
The amplitude of the yellow line is much larger than the amplitude of the blue line, or they're comparable?
What do you mean by amplitude? The yellow line is just a boson star, and there's no.
It's the unperturbed.
There's no scaling, they're both on the same graph.
They're both on the same scale?
Yeah.
That graphic is both on the same scale?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I had not understood.
So can I
No, you can't.
Okay, so let me just, you know, so this is what we've been discussing. But I, you know, I was expecting this perturbation to, you know, in the language of you guys, to explore sort of all the possibilities. And so, you know, it looks interesting. I think that my next one is just the conclusion. So let me just comment here that I've seen some interesting, well, I'm not sure exactly what happens. If throw out boson stars, you just have a complex scalar field. You can basically adjust, you can adjust now how much energy you start with, but you can also adjust how much charge you start with. And in particular, back from my critical behavior days, there's a scenario for initial data where you basically maximize how much charge you have for the amount of energy that you have. And it's not clear, I don't really want to say what, but it looks like there may be something interesting in terms of not seeing this sharpening. But again, it's going to take some more runs. But you know, hopefully something interesting will turn out. Okay, so I think this is just my last slide. So you guys laughed when I said this before, but I still think it's worth saying. And the fact that, you know, I'm happy to see that you can get this convergence through the bounces and everything. So with the complex scalar field, you know, I'm still looking at this charge and what role it can play. And you know, I'm not sure what else to run. I think some of these ideas of looking at nonlinear scalar field, turn off the gravity, so put it in flat space. I can put in any potential pretty much. So that might
what
be
what do you mean by those boson stars appear stable in the linear sense?
So what I expected is that I'd see the boson star, I'd see some perturbation, whether I put it there or just numerical noise, and then eventually it would drive it to black hole formation by sharpening or doing something. So just the fact that I could see it kind of live there for a little while, that's what I meant, sort of linear sense. So sort of like Minkowski is linearly stable. You know, you start with some energy, and if it doesn't form a black hole, you're fine. But if you increase it, then it's non-linearly stable. Right? So if you increase the size of the perturbation, then you can get it to collapse if you exceed some threshold.
Let's forget about the turbo and instability. These boson stars, if they are massive enough, they should be unstable, right? Because as Fanze and Radu, the paper that you quoted, they find that, well, to start with, as you start increasing the charges of the solution, you start developing these cusps in the high charge or mass regime. And after the first cusp in the energy versus the charge, they become unstable. It's not to the turbulent instability. It's
right.
Their
boson stars are not the same.
You should see some kind of instability. Do you see these cusps, or you have not studied yet?
I haven't studied it. We were going to do an excited boson star, which is generically
different
star. But we didn't study the stability. But there is a, you see explicitly when you construct them, that there is a limit on how big the amplitude of the scalar field can be. There are, of course, there is a whole tower of this boson star excitation.
But even inside the same branch, they kind of spiral up.
We don't see any.
Well, I think that's because of the parameters.
Yeah, you have to change parameters in order to.
But yeah, I mean, it's standard.
Wow.
We haven't done it yet. Presumably, it's there.
Jumping from one from excited to.
No. We can talk.
Okay. So sorry. Very dumb question. In the case of complex field, is there any topological charge associated with boson stuff? No.
No. I mean, if we made it like a nonlinear sigma model or something like that, then we could start doing that.
Or if we gate this global symmetry by putting a gate. But you can.
Well, he's talking topological.
Linear scalar, complex scalar, coupled gravity. That's what.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it linear, but yeah, if you turn off gravity, it's linear. Yeah.
No, given that we are eating into coffee time, why don't we thank the speaker again?